Alcoholic Steve.
Steve.
First of all, Lynn, man, as Richard Spike would say, good share. But it was
we
a good
all
share.
Spike.
Don't throw his hand up.
Being relatively new, you knocked the ball out of the park. I appreciate you sharing with us. Thank you. Ernie's like a super sponsor, right? He's been my sponsor better than 21 years. We're well into our 21st year together. I worked the steps with him all the way and had worked them before, but never had worked them with anybody like Ernie. And I think it was about a month ago, there was a meeting where his name got mentioned, like, I think 7 times. Like, he was keeping count. Like, he was like, 1, 2, I think he got up to 7. So that must be some kind of world record. But I love you, Ernie. Come share with us.
Richardson.
Hey!
A very proud member of the West Side Group.
Nice. Say
what? Don't let me curse right out of the boat here. Thank you, someone. Thank you. No, it's very good. Thank you. No, that's very good. Thank you. No, I can hear the adrenaline is flowing. You know, I can sit here and look at all these people in here. Anyway, my sobriety date is St. Patrick's Day, 1987. Now, you may be sitting there scratching your head saying, who gets sober on St. Patrick's Day? Now, I got a story that kind of works on that, but what I want to do is give you a little bit of background into my alcoholic behavior. As far back as I can remember, John, I never felt like people in my family felt, I always thought, like, I must be adopted, you know? So I would go, like, to my mother, where was I born? What year was it? What was the name of the hospital? And they would always give me the right answer because I wasn't adopted. I was just an alcoholic, super alcoholic, too. So I never felt like they sounded like they felt until I was 13 years old. And I went to, you're shaking your head, yeah. I went by the train tracks, and they were drinking vodka and orange juice, a pre-mixed thing, you know? And I remember drinking it, and it went down my chest, and I felt this warmth. And I said, man, before I used to think that, like, they should bring the mothership back and take me back to the promised land. And I go, no, keep it up there. I own this planet, you know? Alcohol was this resilience in me, and you know, I got to tell you, I didn't stay long on alcohol. I went to super alcohol right away. It's on. Score. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was shooting heroin when I was 16. I'm 16. Yeah, and I had a really bad cocaine habit. And you know, I don't know what you guys would do, but I had this really bad cocaine habit in New York. And I went to my wife of like 4 years, and I said, we got to get the fuck out of Dodge. And she goes, why? I said, I had a really bad cocaine habit. You know, my lovely bride said, really? You know, I mean, I was so mischievous, I kept it away from her. So where would you move if you had a really bad cocaine
habit?
Move to the cocaine capital of the world. It made perfect sense to me because that's the way I think. That's the way I think. You know, so you may ask yourself, who gets sober on St. Patrick's Day? And I'm going to tell you a quick story about St. Patrick's Day. My wife said to me on the 16th of March, when you get home from work today, we're going to talk about your drinking. Now, I don't know, guys, what would you do if your wife said that to you? I went out on what I hope to be my last run. Now, I worked in the car business. I know I don't sound like or look like a used car salesman, but I was. and in the car business, they have two shifts. They have a 9 to 3 and a 3 to 9. And that day, on the 16th of March, 1987, I was working 9 to 3. So I got off from work at 3 o'clock, and I went to Mr. Laughs on University Drive. Hey, you're shaking your head. You know that place, right? And I went on what I hoped to be my last run. And I came out of this blackout at 2:30 in the morning with the barmaid who was serving me alcohol earlier in the evening. Now, I don't know if I consummated my relationship with her, but she said this to me, take me home. Well, I thought this was a good idea. I was to take her home. Now, I was on a lifeguard chair on Dania Beach, literally facing the ocean. And I drove her home, and I remember driving home going, man, my wife is going to be pissed off. Because I was supposed to be home from work at 3:30 that afternoon, and now it's 2:30 in the morning. And I got home, and she was pissed. She took my two kids. She left. And I know she left for good because she took their toys with her. And I remember sitting at the edge of the bed saying, you know, if you continue to drink and do super alcohol or heroin, what are you going to call it? You're going to die alone. And I didn't want to die alone because I was alone my whole fucking life. And I didn't want to die alone. And I was this disease that I had inside of me was isolating me from the rest of the world. Now, I'm not going to be speaking as articulately as our previous speaker, but I'm going to give you kind of a gist. For the balance of my talk, I'm going to talk about some really, really bad things that's happened to me over the last 37 years. Now, I don't want you to think for 1 minute that I didn't enjoy my sobriety, but I want to tell you these things because these things happened to me and I didn't drink. Now, the first one is this. My kids are 13 months apart. They're called Irish twins, you know. And my son was 16 and my daughter was 17. And they got into a fist fight and my son punched my daughter in the stomach. And she came over to me. She said, where's mommy? I said, she's at the mall. Why? I need to talk to mommy. I said, what's the matter, Michelle? I had a really good relationship with my daughter and she would tell me anything. I need to talk to mommy. About an hour later, my wife walks in, and they both go to the bathroom, and they both come out of the bathroom crying. And I said, what's up? My wife says, she's pregnant. Now, I don't know about you guys, but the way I was taught in Brooklyn, when your 17-year-old daughter tells you she's pregnant, I went over to her, and there's three people in the room, me, my wife, and my daughter. And I went over to my daughter's ear, and I said, Michelle, tell Daddy the name of the young man who did this to you, so his family can identify the body. I wasn't kidding. And she started crying. I went outside and I looked up and I said, all right, God, this is going to be real fucking interesting. Because I don't know about you guys, but in AA, I never read a book. What do you do when your 17-year-old daughter tells you she's pregnant? There was no book for me to read. So my wife comes out and she says, what do you want to do? I said, well, Diane, we could do one or two things. We can go inside and say, Michelle, mommy, daddy thinks you made the biggest mistake of your life. Pack your shit and go. Or we can say, Michelle, mommy and daddy thinks you made the biggest mistake of your life. We love you and we want to be there for you. I said, I think we should do the latter. So I went inside, said, Michelle, mommy and daddy thinks you made the biggest mistake of your life. But we love you. How pregnant are you? And she pulled her shirt down and there was this bump. She was 7 months pregnant. Now, 7 months prior to this, when she changed her clothes from these really tight-fitting to these loose things, I thought it was a fashion statement. Yeah. But it wasn't. She was trying to hide the fact that she was pregnant. Now, I didn't have to drink nor do a super alcohol at all when my daughter told me that she was pregnant. At all. I relied upon a power greater than myself, which I call God. Second thing that happened to me is my son. God bless him. You guys know him, so you chuckle. When he was 16, he joined a group, an organization of Hispanic men. You might know that. It's called a gang. And they went off and did whatever they had to do. But he was getting high, and I can't caught somebody getting high in my house. I'm in recovery. So I said to my wife, So my son was affiliated with these Hispanic men, and he was sentenced to 6 months in juvenile prison on Southwest 428th Street. It was south of Florida City, all right? Now, every Sunday, my wife and I are driving to the prison to visit my son, and my friends are all going to colleges and looking for dormitories for their kids, but not me. I'm going to visit my son, my 16-year-old son, who, by the way, picked up another year while he was in sleepaway camp. But each week when we would drive down to the prison, I would look up and I'd say, "Oh God, this is going to be real fucking interesting." Because I don't know about you guys, but I never saw a book that what happens when you're 16 in Alcoholics Anonymous. What happens when your 16-year-old son says to you, "I joined this organization," you know, and he gets put away for a year and a half. And as I'm driving down there every Sunday, I'm praying to God and I'm turning it over to God. Not once in that year and a half with my son in prison did I think about drinking, because I have a program of recovery. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the last thing I want to share with you about tragedies or things that are difficult happening to me in my 37 years of being in recovery is I had a window treatment. I had a business. It was a window treatment business. We'd make verticals, blinds, pleated shades, things of that nature. And it was really, really good. I started with $2,500. I had a business partner, blah, 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 blah. And to make a long story short, that company was open for 13 years. 13 years. And I made a technical mistake. I expanded it. We started doing some fancy shit. Again, still in the window treatment business, but I'm doing this stuff, and each month it's sucking the money out of the parent company. And each month my ego would say, "We're going to make a profit next month, Ernie. We're going to make a profit next month." And the months kept going, and months kept going, and I kept losing money and losing money. And finally, I just said, "You know what? I'm going to be cool and stop that venture, and I'm going to go back to my main company," which had good roots. And I brought it back to the basics, but here was the problem. It was good roots, but these people ran these two airplanes into the World Trade Center. And the economy in Florida, I don't know if anybody was down here, but it dried up. Nobody was going to take planes anywhere. And South Florida was literally eating itself alive. Not once during that, I had that business for 13 years, not once during that period of time did I think about drinking or drugging. Because I had a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. My wife, when she called and left with the kids and took it, taught me a valuable lesson about what it's like to live with somebody who has an active addiction. And I had to learn how to do that because my son, he's celebrating 4 years clean now, but... And you guys know, thank you. Don't applaud too loud. He doesn't go to meetings anymore. And I told him, "You can't, Eric, you better let's not do that. You got to go to meetings." I know. But in any event, I realized what it's like to live with somebody who's in active addiction. My son did that to me. He taught me how to live with it. So I knew what my wife was going through. But, after I closed that window treatment business, I went back to school. And now I'm in my 40s, man. I don't have any college experience, but I went back to school and I went to Broward Community College. And I remember after a couple of years, they gave me a diploma. And it was an AA degree. And I thought, fuck, wow, this is great. I'm in AA and they're giving me an AA degree. And I had a dream. I dreamt that I wanted to become a therapist. So I registered at University what's the place in Boca? What's the name of the place? FAU. It's my alma mater.
FAU,
right. I registered over there, and after a couple of years, they gave me this bachelor's degree. Then I had another dream, and I went to Barry University in an accelerated program. In 14 months, I got my master's degree. And all the while, I'm learning how to become a therapist. And I'm honored to tell you here that I'm semi-retired now. I'm going to figure that one out. That just means I can't get a full-time job. But it sounds so much better when you say, I'm semi-retired, you know. The fact of the matter is that I would love to work full-time back in the treatment business. But in any event, these dreams that I had were all a direct result of not drinking. And the people who taught me how not to drink a day at a time were you people. You people. Each one of you taught me in your own special way how not to drink or do super alcohol. And that is a gift you guys gave me that I'll never, ever, ever forget. Now, one of the things that I learned to do when I was a therapist is I learned to think of what active addiction looks like. And active addiction looks like the game of Russian roulette, except where we're looking to play with, you know, a dice, right? Isn't that what you play Russian roulette with, right? No? No, oh, that's right, I'm sorry, it's with a gun. Oh, you guys know. Now here, Russian roulette is this gun, and is when you're in active addiction, you're waiting in line for your turn at the table where the gun is. And you're sitting there, talking to your friends, joking around until it's your turn at the table. And I stop you and I go, Lee, what are you doing, man? Why are you going to pick that gun up? You shrug your shoulders, you pick the gun up, you put it to your head, you pull the trigger, it goes click. What do we do? We get back in line. Our friends and our relatives say, what'd you do, man? What'd you do? You dodged the bullet. Man, leave me the fuck alone, man. Leave me alone. You don't know what it's like to be me. So it's your turn at the table again. And I go, Rick, stop. Why are you going to do this? You shrug your shoulders, you pick the gun up, you put it to your head, you pull the trigger, it goes click. What do? Back in fucking line. Everybody who knows you say, you're crazy, Mike. What are you, nuts? You know what my job is as a therapist? It's if I see you on that line, I do everything in my power to knock you off that line. You know your job, gentlemen? If you see anybody get on that line, it's your job to knock them off the line. Thank you for letting me share.